that's fun, he said. So how does one invent the perfect mirror? Jack asked. Radley shrugged. Just like your fingers. Let your mind play, pick at things. Something develops. Then he said, sometimes. Looking at his fingers on the frets, Jack asked, what happens to a black hole when it disappears? Radley smiled. You mean what happens to the information within? I don't know what I mean. It would be fun if it elongated into a line so narrow that its cut length would be a speck so small it might be invisible. Why would that be fun? Jack asked. Because it might help define the indefinite we're prone to think of as the infinite. Oh. Jack did not understand, but he heard the readiness to answer, the words. Dr. Radley may be surprised by humans, perhaps had inadequate language to deal with them, but he was not surprised black holes appeared to disappear. Do you mind my asking what your mind is playing with, picking at now? Jack asked. Of course not, Radley said. Space locomotion. Space travel? I guess so. I don't believe people are questioning sufficiently the basic principles of physics. Jack said, I'm not. You were taught not. Only thing we were taught to question, Jack said, was our marks, not our teachers. That is, Radley continued rapidly, that the basic laws of physics are universal, cosmological. Considering the history of the cosmos, we humans have been perceiving physical laws as briefly as it takes you to blink your eye, comparatively. Jack blinked. I'm not sure a sufficient weight is given to the fact that our perceptions, so far considered absolute, are entirely dependent upon our intellectual appurtenances. These physical laws, seen from another planet, dependent upon other intellectual appurtenances, might be perceived entirely differently. Probably are. Okay. Yet the true, absolute, ultimate physical laws might conform to no perception of them yet achieved on any planet. Be totally different. Jack said, I guess I'll stick to picking my guitar. It's the same thing, Radley said. You're achieving a system of time and space permits you to play the guitar. We have to achieve a system of time and space presently inconceivable to us to achieve space travel. Radley lifted the boxer dog off his legs and stood it on its own legs on the ground. Well, come on, Arky. Radley stood up. Guess I've got to be polite. Standing up, Radley said, you see, it's okay to think about anything, however silly. That's how questions develop. Feet spread, hands over his head, Dr. Radley stretched fully. It's a silly thought, of course, totally without basis, but wouldn't it be nice if, for example, the elongated black holes had the information to be tramways to get us through space quickly? From where Jack sat on the ground, the stretching man seemed huge. One suggestion or hope always is, Radley continued as he crouched and petted Arky, that everything has a purpose. Not to look for the purpose, not to see it. To see it and deny it is fault, wouldn't you say? Sir? Jack asked. Smiling, Radley waited for Jack to speak. How come you sat and talked with me? Jack asked. Said such things to me, I mean from your own mind. Radley's eyebrows shot up. My way of saying thank you, he said, for your concern. Someday you might have the kindness to remember I did so. Which left Jack totally, absolutely confused. Jack wondered if he was seeing Chester Radley from the right planet. Chapter 18. In his blue bow tie, carrying his silver tray, at dusk, Jack approached a group of formally dressed people on one of the terraces of the main house at Vendemia. Would you care for an hors d'oeuvre, sir? Turning around suddenly, a man grabbed the silver tray firmly with his left hand and held it steady. Ah, liver wrapped in bacon, one of my favorite things. Jack said, you almost dropped the tray, lad. Fletch said, letting it go. Want to see us all dressed so pretty at a grand party at Vendemia, on our hands and knees, eating liver wrapped in bacon off the terrace floor? That would be a pretty sight. The two women to whom Fletch had been talking tittered. Then Fletch thrust his face close to Jack's and whispered, can you spell it? His eyes on them, Dr. Chester Radley guided his wife across the terrace to Fletch. What? Hors d'oeuvre. Sure. Good. Your grandmother never could. My grandmother, the mystery novelist? Your grandmother, the defective novelist, Fletch said. Mr. Fletcher! Radley held out his hand to Fletch. I'm Chester Radley. How nice of you to have me on such short notice. Fletch took Radley's hand. I've wanted to meet you for a long time, Radley said. I'm a great fan of your biography of Edgar Arthur Tharp, Jr. Glaring at Jack, Fletch sniffed. Some like it. My wife, Radley introduced, Amelie. So pleased to meet you, Dr. Fletcher. No doctor at all, Fletch said, not even a patient. Call me Irwin. Irwin? Jack muttered. Since when Irwin? Where are you from originally? Amelie asked. Her eyes were glazed with complete indifference. Jack noticed that, unlike her appearance that morning, not one hair on Amelie Radley's head was either out of place or gray. Although still puffy, the skin of her face was smooth and had good color. Montana, Fletch answered. Montana? Jack expostulated behind Fletch's back. Since when Montana?
Mr. Fletcher, Radley said, I thought I wouldn't show you the beer stat until morning. It's in the gym. The light'll be better in the morning.
That's fine, Fletch said. Behind Fletch's back, Jack whispered, What's a beer stat?
Although I will say hanging a precious painting in a gymnasium strikes me as odd.
Oh, Jack said, a painting.
You haven't seen the gym, Radley smiled. The painting is perfectly safe there, temperature and humidity controlled. Its size and power, vigor, seem well suited to the gym.
Amelie said, My husband is eccentric. Then she said to Fletch, And tell me, do you speak coyote?
Each entertaining a separate group around the terrace were Chet, Amy, Downs, Beauville, Nancy Dunbar. Neither Alexis nor Duncan was there.
I wonder if after dinner you might join me in the study, Radley asked Fletch. I figure it'll be my only chance to have a quiet chat with you about your book, Pinto. Reading your biography some time ago, I made notes, never thinking I'd have the opportunity to meet you.
Of course, Fletch said, that will be fine.
10 o'clock, then, Radley said.
Fletch said, see you.
As the Radleys drew off, Fletch turned to Jack. Get rid of the tray, will you? We need a walk and talk.
How did you get here? Jack asked.
Radley has a painting he wants to sell. I can't afford it, of course, but he doesn't know that.
Jack handed his tray of hors d'oeuvres to Peppy, who already had one. Now he had a tray in each hand.
Here, Fletch said to Peppy, I'll help you.
He picked an hors d'oeuvre off one of the trays.
Thanks a lot, Peppy said.
Sir.
Anytime.
Fletch and Jack walked down the terrace steps.
I'll show you my digs, Jack said.
Fletch said, I suppose I can be late, but I really ought to be back in time for the dinner. They were walking around the lit pool. A few young from the party idled in the pool area. They glanced at the white-jacketed man in black tie walking into the gardens with a young waiter.
Tell me everything you know.
Jack said, That would take forever.
I haven't got forever.
As they walked the bricked paths through the indirectly lit landscaped gardens, Jack said, There are more rules for living here than there are in a military academy or a monastery, and they are all circumvented, seemingly, by everybody.
Things are a little oppressive at Vindemia, is that it? The cork is kept on pretty tight?
To the point of rebellion, Jack said. I've heard even the CEO, Eric Beauville, says he feels a prisoner here.
Talk to me, Fletch said.
The rebellion isn't open, Jack said. Everyone just sneaks around spending more energy circumventing the rules than they seem to spend doing anything else. Like living, working. So there's a kind of gridlock.
Enjoying the flora and fauna of the garden paths, Fletch said, Gridlock in paradise. Could it be otherwise? I've always suspected Adam and Eve sinned out of pure boredom. Jack described how the chief executive officer, Eric Beauville, and Radley's private secretary, Nancy Dunbar, hid their smoking cigarettes. Everyone from Radley's wife to his stable boy hid their liquor. Daughter Alexis, her wild sex compulsions. Son Duncan, his lying, cheating, and use of hard drugs.
Busy little place, Fletch said, for all that.
Jack said, Radley knows his son Chet is gay.
Gay, Fletch repeated.
Chet doesn't respond to girls at all. Peppy, that kid you just so thoughtfully helped by making one of his trays lighter, is the stable boy and Chet's lover.
But Shauna
is Dr. Radley's lover.
Aha!
Doing double duty as Chet's fiancée to keep up the image necessary for Chet's impending national political career.
You know a few things yourself.
Thanks to Andy Sist.
I thought you said there's no story here.
Jack said, not one to tell.
No, Fletch said, not one to tell.
Come in.
Jack opened the door to his half of the cottage.
There's no lock on your door,
Fletch said. I've noticed. I guess when you've got a chain-link fence around the whole estate, only one gate, guards at it, not every door within the estate needs to be locked. We're protected from everything but our protectors, Jack said. We even have passports we have to show to enter the estate.
Passports?
Even have to show them at the company store to buy food. Mine's pink.
Fletch glanced around the small living dining room, kitchenette. Do you suppose this place is bugged?
Do I care?
Ah, Fletch said. Doesn't take you long to get rebellious. I must remember that next time you visit and I ask you to take a shower.
Jack said, there was a murder here. I think that much is pretty clear. In a laboratory which was not supposed to have lethal gas in it, Dr. Jim Wilson was killed by lethal gas. He wasn't supposed to be in the laboratory at that moment. Radley was.
Is the death being investigated?
It must be. Unnatural death, all that, but I've seen no sign of it.
Radley can't keep the police out.
I haven't seen any police around, other than his own rent-a-cops. Wandering around the room, Jack then talked generally of almost everything he had seen, heard, thought, felt, since arriving at Vendemia.
Okay, Jack. You've been here a while.
Fletch relaxed in the two-seater couch. Who's making all these attempts on Chester Radley's life?
Process of elimination? Jack asked. Motive? Opportunity?
Any method at your command.
Well, his mother-in-law isn't. She's a strong old dear and the only one around here who seems genuinely appreciative, respectful of Dr. Radley. She seems to think he really is perfect.
Pretty old, is she? All her illicit compulsions behind her?
I doubt Mrs. Radley could organize these attempts. You just met her, Amelie.
Do you suppose she really thinks coyote is a language? Or was she trying to tell me she's nuts?
Her brain is filled with little pills bumping into each other in a pool of liquor.
Fletch said, she could have fixed the coffee pot to electrocute her husband.
Yes, she could have, Jack agreed. That wouldn't have taken much doing. It was in his personal dressing room. But the cabin explosion, the broken front axle on the Jeep.
I've been thinking about that, Fletch said. Sounds to me like the work of two different people working at cross purposes. Radley didn't get blown up in the cabin because the Jeep axle broke first. Also possibly true in what happened in the laboratory. One person filled it with poison gas, another arranged a bomb in the building.
You were right. Too much time went by between Wilson's being poisoned by gas and the explosion.
Daughter Amy is the only one who seems to have her father where she wants him. She's told him if she doesn't get what she wants, she'll falsely accuse him of sexually abusing her as a child.
Nice.
It seems to be working. So she has no motive for knocking off her father. She has 7 children she keeps here and has gotten Papa to pay off 3 husbands.
What some women will do to protect themselves from controlling men.
In olden times, some became witches for the same reason. Later, others bought bikes and got jobs.
He's got more reason to kill her than she him, to my mind.
And Peppy says anybody could have poisoned the horse, if the horse was poisoned.
Poison is easy to get, especially on a farm. Any kind of poison could have been used, from a stimulant to a depressant.
Well, Mrs. Radley uses depressants and stimulants, I guess. I emptied her rubbish this morning, but I don't see her tiptoeing around a stable before dawn.
Lethal gas is something else. I would think that could be traced. It had to come from somewhere.
So, Jack said, it looks to me more than one person is making attempts on Radley's life.
Me too. Fletch stood up.
You've eliminated very few people, if any, and that leaves a lot of suspects. Rather too many.
He patted his cummerbund.
A few days with your mother has made me uncommonly hungry.
She has that effect, Jack said. Did you enjoy your time with her at all?
Definitely I did. Your mother's wise and witty, Fletch said. Always has been. I suppose at some point during the last 20 years I could have looked her up. Should have.
Do you feel badly about not having done so?
Fletch looked at his son in the lamplight of the small room.
I do now.
You had no real reason to, Jack said. You didn't know about me. She didn't tell you. In fact, she was sort of hiding from you.
Well, that's not nice to think about.
And people do drop from sight.
The question now is, Fletch said, what are we going to do about Radley? You called me here.
Well, thanks for coming, by the way.
I want to see that Bierstadt anyway. There appear to have been a number of attempts on his life. One succeeded in killing an innocent bystander. The methods of trying to kill him have been distinctly different, maybe even contradictory.
Lots of attempts, Jack said, lots of suspects.
Different methods, from poisons to bombs. And one successful murderer. And I don't see that Chester Radley deserves being murdered in particular, do you?
He sat with me in a patch of woods this afternoon, Jack said, and talked to me.
You sort of feel like you're sitting next to a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier or something. But other than that, he's a nice guy. I mean, he hasn't committed mass murder, raped his daughter, drugged his wife and son, ground the faces of the poor. Well, if anything, to the contrary. Well, Fletch glanced at his watch. I'm meeting with Radley at 10 o'clock. Jack said, maybe it's that no one talks to him. I mean, really talks to him. It seemed to me this afternoon that, for him, people are a long reach, if you know what I mean. You know, Jack, Fletch said at the door, even King George III got the point after a while. Chapter 19. Listen, dear lady, Mortimer lectured gently. He sat by Crystal's bed. We have only two real sources of energy. One is sleep, the other is food. The telephone he had placed in the corner of the gymnasium for Crystal's use rang. You must not spend all night every night reading. Man does not live by literature alone. You need sleep.
I get hungry, too hungry to sleep, Crystal said. I mean, I used to think I was hungry.
That's the good dear. You're beginning to understand.
Mortimer answered the phone.
Hello? Oh, my God, it's that Fletcher bird. I thought we got rid of you, Fletcher. Please at least tell me you've left the state of Wyoming.
I've left the state, Fletch said.
That's the best thing I've heard about Wyoming since I've been here. You've left.
Talking on his personal communicator, Fletch was walking back through the twisting landscaped walks to Vendemia's main house.
Just want to know how you two are getting along.
Better without you, Mortimer said.
Either one of you killed the other yet?
I am enjoying Crystal's company enormously.
You are?
Best company I've had in years. What a charming lady. She tells wonderful stories.
Yeah, I know.
Nothing about the boxing world, of course. Those stories I tell, Mortimer said. To her, they're news.
So you're grateful I brought Crystal to you?
And then left.
I didn't feel all that welcome this morning.
You weren't.
I mean, we weren't as well received at your place as we might have been under the circumstances.
Better than you deserved. We didn't shoot you.
Well, we did shoot at you, but we didn't succeed in killing you. More's the pity. You couldn't have hit me from more than an arm's length away, even if you had succeeded in reloading the gun.
I seem to remember you on the ground, on your back.
I tripped.
That's what Schmeling said.
What happened to gratitude?
It came in the last race at Hialeah. Hasn't been heard from since.
Okay, I give up, Fletch said. Is Crystal within reach of the phone? I want to make sure she's still among the living and breathing.
Here, Mortimer said. She lives, she breathes. With a friend like you, I don't know why she bothers.
Fletch, Crystal asked, where are you?
Vendemia.
How could you be? That's in Georgia. You just left here this morning.
I was propelled by Mr. Mortimer's bad breath.
Have you seen Jack?
Just left him. He's fine. How are you?
Having a wonderful time. Whatever convinced you Mr. Mortimer is the solution to my problems?
At frequent great risk to myself, I am determined to see the best in people.
I'm even exercising.
How's that?
He strapped wrist weights and ankle weights on me. I've been doing arm lifts and leg lifts in bed.
Lifting weights in bed? I've done that.
Earlier I did 5 sit-ups. Later 3 sit-ups. I'm scheduled to do 1 more. I feel the blood coursing through my veins vigorously.
You must be exhausted.
He gives me frequent high-energy snacks. The food makes me want to do these exercises. Shrinking the belly, he calls it.
In Vendemia's dark gardens, Fletch envisioned Crystal's mammoth white belly shrinking. Then he envisioned the polar ice cap melting.
That's good.
Watching the boys here in the gym inspires me. My God, the energy they spend. They jump rope, lift weights for hours, it seems, beat up punching bags, beat up each other, then do one-armed chin-ups just for fun. I didn't know even boys could have so much energy.
Fletch said, it's why war was invented.
I think I inspire them, too. Every once in a while, they look over at me, the great burial mound, and throw themselves back into their training, speed up. Well, seeing what all they do makes me lift my arms and legs a few more times. We drive each other on.
Mr. Mortimer's being nice enough?
He's a dear, such a gentleman.
Pooh, Fletch said. If he's a gentleman, I'm a trout.
You're a trout. He couldn't be more considerate, charming, encouraging. He says I'll be doing standing exercises within 5 days, beginning to hike within 7.
Just don't wreck the punching bags, Crystal. I mean, it actually is possible to hit them too hard.
I'm not to think about losing weight. It'll just happen.
That sounds right.
My goal is not to lose weight. It's to change my way of life, my way of thinking.
Your perceptions of yourself.
How's Carrie? Did you see her?
I stopped by the farm this afternoon to get a change of clothes. She's well. She's waiting for a mare to drop her filly.
Why would a mayor drop cream cheese?
Crystal, you're still thinking food.
Fletch, did you happen to notice the younger boy here?
Ricky, yes.
There's something about him.
Something what?
I don't know. Standing still, being quiet, still he oozes some kind of power.
Sex?
More than that.
Crystal separated her words with pauses.
One cannot help listening to him, watching him.
Is he handsome, attractive, what?
It's something else.
Charisma?
I read to him this afternoon from a book that just happened to be here. Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men.
Mr. Mortimer reads Steinbeck?
He has lots of books.
He does?
At first, I was just reading to Ricky. He was sitting by my bed. Then I began to feel things from him.
From Steinbeck? Of course.
No, from Ricky. Then I started watching him as I read. He was hardly moving. His legs were twisted around each other. I couldn't actually see the muscles of his shoulders, chest, arms, hands, even his face moving, but they were moving. I could feel them moving. I couldn't hear or see him breathing, but I could tell his breathing was under some kind of intense control. His eyes were pulsing. Is that the right word?
I don't know.
What I mean is that he was so into it. He was feeling it, every word. He was reacting physically to it. But I couldn't see exactly what he was doing or how he was doing it.
In other words, even while you were reading Steinbeck, somehow Ricky was making you watch him.
Yeah, something like that. Can you explain it?
No. Yes.
Mr. Mortimer here is making faces at me.
Fletch heard a grumble from the background.
He says damned kid looked so much at himself in a mirror he fell into it, and now he wants everybody else to join him there.
Crystal laughed. Mr. Mortimer said that?
What's your explanation?
No explanation, just a question.
What's the question?
With which are you in love, Crystal? Mr. Mortimer or Ricky? Or both?
You think I'm in love? Oh, maybe. I love Wyoming. Oops, that did it. Mr. Mortimer says I have to hang up now. It's time for my sit-up.
Fletch had waited on a high spot at the edge of the gardens until he had finished his conversation with Crystal. At almost eye level was the large terrace of Vendemia's main house. Men in white jackets and bow ties, women in their pretty summer dresses milled around. At the side of the terrace opposite the bar and serving tables, a string quartet played Haydn. With his straight back, light glinting from his horn-rimmed glasses, Dr. Chester Radley was urging his guests in to dinner. Fletch noticed that variously colored lights, party lights, were built into the walls of the house facing the terrace, as well as the low walls surrounding it. Simply by switching them on, these lights would give the terrace a party glow, even if no one were partying. For a moment, Fletch watched the rich, brilliant man, gracious and graceful host, smiling, inviting his many friends into his home for dinner. The rich, brilliant, gracious, and graceful man whom more than one person was trying to murder. Slipping the little telephone into his jacket's pocket, Fletch rejoined the party. Chapter 20. Close the door. Dr. Chester Radley was standing at an angle between a highly polished mahogany desk and mahogany floor-to-ceiling bookshelves in his study at Vendemia. Directly in front of him, in its own mahogany stand, was a world globe. It was 10 o'clock. Fletch closed the door.
"Would you like a cognac?" Radley asked.
Approaching, Fletch said, "You drink cognac?"
"On occasion."
"Sure." On a shelf at the base of the window, separating the bookshelves behind his desk, Radley poured cognac into two snifters on a silver tray. Nowhere on the desk, nowhere visible in the room, was a copy of Fletch's book, Pinto. Fletch took the snifter.
"Thank you."
"Mr. Fletcher," Radley said as he inhaled from his snifter, "I want to thank you and your son for showing your concern for me, well, for another human being, by coming here to help solve what you see as my problems."
"My son?"
"Yes, the pool boy, Jack Faoni, the young man who was serving hors d'oeuvres on the terrace before dinner. You know he's my son? You two circling each other on the terrace, whispering questions and answers, making jokes, I believe, behind each other's backs, only each other could hear, and I dare say appreciate, was a piece of theater I would have regretted missing." Jack had said something to Fletch about being next to Chester Radley was like being next to a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, overwhelming.
Fletch said. You can't possibly know Jack Faoni is my son. Even your lover, Shauna Stoffel, doesn't know it.
Radley smiled. People here at Vendemia believe all the phones are tapped and that the one outside the general store is not.
Fletch said, and that's the one that is.
Radley said, it's much cheaper. More efficient to tap one phone than dozens. Surely you can see that.
Yes, Fletch said, I can see that.
Radley knew every word Jack had said to him while Fletch was driving into Wyoming.
Did you invite me here so I can sing Get Along Little Dogies to you?
I invited you here to thank you, and to assure you that everything is fine.
Everything is not fine, Fletch said.
And by now I assume you and your son have had a long chat, and he has filled you in on everything he has learned about me and my household.
Right again.
Shauna called Jack in without my knowledge or permission. I was very surprised to read the notes of her conversation with him from the phone outside the general store.
Reading those notes, something about Shauna was confirmed, and I learned something else about her. What was confirmed was her very real love, passion, and concern for me. What I learned is that Snow turns her on in a way I hadn't realized.
Beg pardon?
Apparently, a few years ago, she grabbed your sweating son in the snow in Stowe, Vermont, one night, tore his shirt off him, and hustled him to her bed for a few hours of passionate love crawl.
Oh, you didn't know that?
He hasn't told me that part yet.
It was in Berlin on a night snow was falling a year ago, Shauna and I discovered ourselves having a snowball fight in the street, shoving fresh snow down each other's collars, etc.
Radley's smile was shy. Also confirmed was that there was nothing contrived about Shauna and me ending up in bed together that night. Not that I thought there was. As a result of this discovery, I am making arrangements for business conferences in St. Moritz this next winter.
Shauna really loves you, Fletch posited. Is that what you're saying?
Passionately. Isn't that nice?
Wonderful.
So she called Jack. Jack came here, and he called you, and you came here. By the way, I did read Pinto and enjoyed it.
No notes?
Of course notes. No questions, though. None that I remember.
Well, that's good. I felt I was facing an oral examination tonight.
Oh, no examination at all, Radley said. Just a simple thank you, and a statement that there is no problem.
There is a problem.
Are you genuinely interested in the Bierstadt?
I'd like to see it.
Fine. I'll show it to you in the morning as planned, before you leave.
Dr. Radley, someone... more than one is, I mean, are, trying to kill you.